Welcome back to Making Waves. Now for some announcements. Today, as we speak, a statewide day of action against the U.S. war on Iraq is underway. New Hampshire Peace Action, members of New Hampshire Veterans for Peace, and local peace and justice groups, including Seacoast Peace Response, put out the call for this action. People will be gathering in conspicuous places at their local malls or stores during the Christmas shopping day. New Hampshire Peace Action provided holiday cards to people to hand out to shoppers as they exit the mall or store. The card juxtaposes the seasonal call for peace on earth with the war and occupation of Iraq, military spending information, the humanitarian crisis in Iraq, and what ordinary citizens can do. Please help New Hampshire spread the real meaning of the season by reaching consumers at every mall in the state. There is still time to be a part of this action. You can try to call Anne at 603-228-0559, or you can go to www.nhpeaceaction.org to download the card and read more about the action. And if you don't get to it today, you can do it a different day this week. Beyond that, we have a quiet week as far as organized activist happenings coming up. Everyone is busy for the holidays, it seems. Do come by the regular Friday night vigil in Portsmouth Market Square from 5 to 6 p.m. Standing for Peace is a great way to mark the night before Christmas. Looking further ahead, Sunday, January 2nd, 2005, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. is a meditation marathon at the Arya Loka Buddhist Center in Newmarket, New Hampshire. This is a pledge or donation event. See www.ayaloka.org or call 603-659-5456 for more details. The proceeds benefit Arya Loka and the Fellowship of Reconciliation. And on Tuesday, January 4th at 7 p.m., New Hampshire filmmaker Tom Jackson will be premiering his brand new film, Worlds Apart, 9/11 First Responders Against War, at the UU Church on 292 State Street in Portsmouth. This film is about a group of September 11th, 2001 first responders who have called for nonviolent responses to the attacks on their city. It is their belief that violence will only breed more violence, and the cycle will go on and on and on. Worlds Apart focuses on these particular heroes of 9/11 and their lives since September 11th. The documentary features footage from a peacemaking delegation that brought 9/11 EMT Megan Bartlett, who spoke in New Hampshire in Portsmouth this past fall, and Joe Public Films producer Tom Jackson, who works right here in Portsmouth, to Afghanistan in May 2004. There they met with Afghan first responders to establish ties of friendship and to learn more about Afghanistan and their particular struggles. For more information, contact 603-750-7506 or email amyla44@juno.com. This is a program sponsored by Seacoast Peace Response.
Next, we have a commentary by Mumia Abu-Jamal, U.S. political prisoner, asking the question, is fascism possible here?
Is fascism possible here? Fascism. The very word evokes dark, menacing images of troops marching in lockstep in support of a terrible, malevolent ideology. In a word, it suggests the followers of Mussolini in Italy or Hitler in Germany. To most of us, its very mention suggests its foreign nature, its otherness. Therein lies its danger. For because it is seen as a foreign ideology, the inevitable idea arises, it can't happen here. Those who say this either don't know or don't want to know American history. They prefer the safe myths to the ugly truths of how this country came to be what it is. What is fascism? In short, it is a merger of state and corporate interests. what is totalitarianism. On April 23, 1976, the U.S. Congress issued its final select committee report, which charged, "We have seen segments of our government adopt tactics unworthy of a democracy, and occasionally reminiscent of the tactics of totalitarian regimes." The chief investigative branch of the federal government, FBI, which was charged by law with investigating crimes and preventing criminal conduct, itself engaged in lawless tactics and responded to a deep-seated social problem by fomenting violence and unrest. 6 months earlier, then-Senator Walter Mondale would make similar comments as he opened hearings into the COINTELPRO revelations. On November 19, 1975, he stated, "Yesterday, this committee heard some of the most disturbing testimony that can be imagined in a free society. We heard evidence that for decades, the institutions designed to enforce the laws and constitution of our country have been engaging in conduct that violates the law and the Constitution. We heard that the FBI, which is part of the Department of Justice, took justice into its own hands by seeking to punish those with unpopular ideas. We learned that the chief law enforcement agency in the federal government decided that it did not need laws to investigate and suppress the peaceful and constitutional activities of those whom it disapproved." Senator Mondale added, on the floor of the Senate, "We heard testimony that the FBI, to protect the country against those it believed had totalitarian political views, employed the tactics of totalitarian societies against American citizens. We heard that the FBI attempted to destroy one of our greatest leaders in the field of civil rights." Here he refers to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. "And then replace him with someone of the FBI's choosing. The state waged war against its own alleged citizens with impunity." But now, years after those hearings, thanks to the cleverly named U.S. Patriot Act, what was illegal during the COINTELPRO era is legal today. People who have opposed the Iraq War or other actions of the Bush regime have been beaten, pepper sprayed, framed, jailed, and tortured in Los Angeles, New York City, Philadelphia, and beyond for following their alleged rights under the First Amendment. They have been caged and corralled into so-called free speech zones, which almost literally begs the question, if cages are free speech zones, what do you call the huge tracts of land and air that are outside those cages? Non-free speech zones? And virtually every judge who has been asked to protect the people's rights to protest and assemble over the cops' right to cage and repress has gone the cops' way. Fascism, the merger of state and corporate power, has made the struggle of workers for an eight-hour day, for the right to unionize, for vacation days, for collective bargaining, one stained with the blood of thousands of martyrs, martyrs for labor, like many of the members of the industrial workers of the world, known as the Wobblies. They were beaten, thrown off trains, jailed by the dozens, framed and slain for defending workers' rights. Fascism is more than a funny-sounding word. It has dived deep into the fabric of American life and creeps forward today under cover of law. For Free Speech Radio News, from Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
They're saying Greenpeace is terrorist. If what they say is true, if that's what Greenpeace does, I'm proud to be a terrorist too. Trial and it wouldn't be reported. thuggery. Screw you, foreign policy. Who needs evildoers with friends like these?
That was Pierce Woodward with Evildoers. You're listening to Making Waves on WSCA 106.1 FM. As mentioned earlier in the show, December 17, 1791 was the day that the U.S. Bill of Rights was ratified. In honor of this occasion, Brian Gregg has gone to Concord to interview Claire Ebel, who is the New Hampshire Civil Liberties Union director.
213 years ago this week, the United States Congress adopted the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, which guarantee individual liberties and set sharp limits on the power of the government to invade them. Today, the freedoms we've come to regard as quintessentially American arguably are under threat as never before in our history. The right to a jury trial, the right to be defended by a lawyer, to be free from arbitrary search and seizure, and even freedom of speech and association have all come under attack by the Bush administration in the name of the so-called War on Terror. The New Hampshire Civil Liberties Union, like its parent organization, the ACLU, was formed to defend these freedoms. Under George W. Bush 2.0, it appears they will have their work cut out for them. On Friday, December 17th, I spoke with Claire Ebel, executive director of the NHCLU, in her office in Concord. I want to begin by asking you about the so-called USA Patriot Act, passed in the wake of the attacks of September 11th, 2001, with barely a chance for Congress to read the bill, let alone debate it. What was the net effect of the Patriot Act on civil liberties in the United States?
I think, in fact, that civil liberties are in crisis, under attack everywhere. The Patriot Act has done things to our individual rights that no one would have anticipated. It is not unprecedented in our history that when there are frightening events, that we react as somewhat frightened children. Examples begin in the presidency of John Adams when the Alien and Sedition Acts were passed. But those acts either expired or were repealed when Thomas Jefferson's presidency began. The problem with the Patriot Act is that because it is a declared war on terror, and because terrorism is a war without end, the violations of civil liberties are without end. And I think that's the primary concern with the Patriot Act, that it has launched a war that will never end.
And, you know, I think I'll never forget Tom Brokaw on September the 12th, 2001, saying repeatedly that this country would obviously need to curtail civil liberties. And I don't know who wrote his script, but sure enough, that's exactly what happened. What do you think about this? Was some restriction in our freedoms necessary, or was there another way to handle the threat of terrorism on our soil while leaving the Bill of Rights basically intact?
You know, there was really no reason to curtail civil liberties. The problem wasn't civil liberties. The problem was, for example, and the Pentagon has acknowledged this, that it was not a lack of intelligence information that preceded the events of September 11th. It was a lack of translators. We didn't have enough people in the defense and the State Departments who spoke Farsi or others of the language that terrorists in the Middle East and all around the world speak. And so the problem wasn't civil liberties. What happened, in my view, is we gave to the terrorists with the passage of the Patriot Act what they couldn't achieve with the heinous acts that occurred on September 11th. They wanted to bring our government down, not by destroying democracy, but by destroying our freedoms. And we did that for them. After September 11th, we were wounded, we were frightened, we were angry, we were horrified. We were bent, but we weren't broken. We broke ourselves when the Patriot Act was signed, and our civil liberties, the backbone, the fundamental cornerstone of our republic, were nibbled away at and in some cases hacked to pieces.
And I wonder if we can talk specifically about domestic terrorism under the Patriot Act. The ACLU says that domestic terrorism is defined so broadly that it could include protest actions by Greenpeace or Vieques Islanders in Puerto Rico or anti-globalists in Seattle, triggering an investigation that could result in the government seizing people's property without a hearing and without ever being charged with a crime, among other things. Do you think that a law like this is designed to stifle dissent?
Oh, I think that's absolutely the intent of the drafters. I do not believe that was necessarily the intent of the Congress. You pointed out in your introduction, this bill was almost 400 pages long, and the final bill was not delivered to the Congress until minutes or hours before it was voted on. Not a single member of Congress had the opportunity to read the Patriot Act before they voted on. In the Senate, there was only one dissenting vote, and that was Russell Feingold, who said that he was not necessarily against the act. He simply wanted to read it before he voted on it. He, of course, was voted down overwhelmingly. There were only a handful of votes cast against the Patriot Act in the House, I think 31 or 32. Half of the Massachusetts delegation voted against it. The New Hampshire delegation did not. I don't know about Maine's delegation. But it's probably unlikely that they voted against it. They were afraid. And when the Attorney General of the United States, John Ashcroft, went to the congressional hearings, which were secret, and said that if you do not support the USA Patriot Act, you are giving aid and comfort to the enemy, it would have taken enormous courage for a politician to stand up and say, I don't think so. Not this time. And so we passed this in fear. We created an atmosphere where the intent, I think, of the drafters was exactly to stifle personal freedom, individual liberty, and dissent. Anyone who is a member of Operation Rescue, Anyone who has ever given money to the Sea Shepherd Society, the people who put their boats between the whalers and the whales, to PETA, the people for the ethical treatment of animals, again, you mentioned the Vieques Islands protesters, and other domestic groups, all of them could be established tomorrow as domestic terrorist organizations if, in fact, when Mr. Ashcroft gets up tomorrow morning, he decides that they ought to be. And then if you have given any money to any of these organizations, you've given them material support, or if a friend of yours who's part of Operation Rescue stays at your home on his way to a demonstration, you have given material support to a terrorist organization, you can be charged as a domestic terrorist on that flimsy association.
And what is Operation Rescue? That rings a bell, but I'm not familiar with that organization.
Operation Rescue is the group of anti-choice activists who very often block access to clinics. And so they meet the definition of domestic terrorism because, for example, they are breaking the law. They are attempting to intimidate, and individuals may, in fact, be harmed or killed in their actions. You have had clinic bombings that Operation Rescue people have been associated with. I am not aware that any Operation Rescue efforts have been singled out as the cause of murderous attacks, but they have certainly been supportive of those attacks.
And I was looking at that, at the language of that law, and it seemed to me that even somebody counseling on sort of the other side of that issue on abortion, who could, you know, provide access to services for abortion, could possibly, just that act alone, could possibly come under that definition of domestic terrorism, in the sense that if life is defined as, you know, a fetus, it's an act dangerous to human life. And I guess depending on the exact nature of the law, but some of these state laws that are coming up to try to restrict abortion, and to me it seemed arguably possible that somebody could, in providing abortion services or even counseling it, possibly come under that definition. Does that seem like a danger these days?
You know, that's a very interesting question, and I have never thought through the other side of that particular issue. I think you are correct. If, in fact, laws are passed, and as you point out, in many states across the country, such laws are being considered, but if laws are passed defining conception as the beginning of life and defining the fertilized ovum as a person, then it is entirely possible that individuals involved in giving counseling to those who seek abortions, it is possible that individuals who undergo abortions, it is possible that physicians and certified medical personnel who provide abortions could, in fact, not only be charged under these criminal statutes, but could have the Patriot Act terrorist provisions applied to their activities if they, in fact, are part of an organization.
And what happened to the so-called Patriot Act II, which further increased the government's powers to check up on innocent people without a warrant? I've read that it was killed in Congress because of massive public outcry, including by the ACLU, but then also that its provisions, or some of them at least, have ended up in other bills, including the recent intelligence overhaul bill. Is Patriot Act II, you know, alive and well?
You know, I hope many of your listeners remember Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers. Somewhere in the federal government, we have a Daniel Ellsberg. We have an individual who had the courage to release to the American public the text of Patriot II. It's 86 or 89 pages long. It was on websites of various groups. It was read aloud on public TV and on some commercial broadcasts on TV and on radio. We would not know of its existence had there not been a person of courage who came forward and released that information. It was actually never introduced because the furor, the uproar that followed the knowledge of the American people that this thing was coming down the pike caused those who sponsored it and those who supported it to back off. Many conservative Republican senators and representatives were horrified about some of the provisions in Patriot 2. So the bill itself was actually never introduced. But as you correctly point out, pieces of it were. There were sections of Patriot 2 that were either attached to other pieces of legislation or were introduced as independent pieces of legislation. I don't know what the 9/11 Commission report final legislation looks like. I haven't been able to get a copy of it yet to read it. But it was my understanding that there were some Patriot 2 provisions that were part of the conference committee process when the House and Senate versions of that bill were being ironed out and a compromise legislation was created. I don't know the answer to your question. I am frightened, and as soon as I can, I will attempt to find out.
And I wonder if we can talk a little bit about some of the specifics, either in Patriot 1 or 2. You know, there's a lot of talk about the government being able to look up people's library book records and bookstore purchases and some ability to get financial records through the IRS and other things that sort of send a chill through, I think, the body politic of this country. Anything else as far as specific provisions of this whole domestic operation of the so-called war on terror?
And so-called is exactly the correct nomenclature, because many of the provisions of Patriot 2, of Patriot and Patriot 2, have nothing whatever to do with terrorism. For example, Section 216, in essence, gives the government the right to obtain search warrants with no showing of probable cause, with no showing of evidence whatever, simply with the assertion by the federal agent that it is part of an ongoing investigation, not into terror, but into ordinary crime. And the second part of Section 216 extends that ability to state and local officials. And therefore, the state police in New Hampshire, the state police in Maine, could attempt through their prosecutors or through their investigators to obtain a warrant under the Patriot Act without any showing of proof whatever, no indication of suspicion, simply an assertion that it was part of an ongoing investigation into ordinary criminal activity. Now, most of your listeners are not criminals, and this provision probably doesn't scare them, but it should, because what it permits law enforcement to do is to take the Fourth Amendment in that wonderful Bill of Rights and shred it. Because the Fourth Amendment says you are protected against unreasonable searches and seizures in your person and your papers. And the courts have interpreted unreasonable to be a search that is not supported by probable cause, which is a likelihood that criminal activity will be discovered if this warrant is exercised. My attorney friends have suggested to me it's about a 40% likelihood. Patriot Act says you don't need that anymore. You can use Section 216 to get a warrant. And the frightening part, one of the most frightening parts of the Patriot Act, is over and over again, the language in the bill says the judge shall issue the warrant. There is no judicial review whatever. If a federal officer goes to court under 216 to seek a warrant and says it's part of an ongoing investigation, the judge can't refuse to issue the warrant.
And has this part of the act been challenged in court, or is it even possible to challenge that act in court given those provisions? I mean, it seems to erase the whole balance of powers in the federal government.
In essence, it does. In essence, it renders the judicial branch of government merely a rubber stamp. And those words are over and over again repeated throughout the Patriot Act. There are challenges to so many parts of the Patriot Act. I am not aware of a challenge to 216, that does not mean that one isn't coming. Because, again, part of the problem with the Patriot Act is that this can be done in secrecy. And so it could be that scores or hundreds or thousands of these warrants have been issued. And if they don't result in a prosecution, we don't know they're there. It's the same kind of perverse climate of fear that is created when domestic groups such as PETA, Operation Rescue, the Sea Shepherd Society, the Vieques protesters, are put in a position where their very existence can be a violation of the Patriot Act. We are afraid, or we should be afraid, because we don't know if we're being spied upon by the government on an assertion of investigation of ordinary criminal activity. We don't know unless we're arrested, and by then, it's too late.
You're listening to Making Waves. This is Brian Gregg. I'm speaking with Claire Ebel, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Civil Liberties Union. Looking at another part of the Patriot Act, Sections 507 and 8, they're talking about educational records that can be disclosed. And I wonder if you can say a bit about what kind of information the government would have access to.
You know, Section 507 is really an interesting one, and I think all of your listeners might be a little perturbed about what happened in the immediate aftermath of September 11th. The FBI and other federal agent fanned out across the country and went to academic institutions, predominantly colleges and universities, and demanded lists of students. And they established criteria such as students who are members of Islamic organizations, students with Arabic-sounding names, students who might have associations with students who are Arabic or have Arabic-sounding names. The kind of free association that the Bill of Rights guarantees was now the subject of federal investigators attempting to browbeat and coerce educational officials to turn over confidential student records. Now, there were hundreds of colleges and universities, some of the most prestigious in the nation, who turned the records over without a blink. The provost of the University of Michigan held an impromptu news conference when they came to him and said, if they bring me a warrant from a judge in my jurisdiction with the name of a student at my university listed on the warrant, I will consider whether to give them the information. Otherwise, they can go away. And I told that story at a forum at the University of New Hampshire about 2 months after September 11th. And I have a terrible memory for names and a very good memory for faces. And an extraordinarily well-dressed, beautifully coiffed, just a handsome woman, very tall, very stately, came up to me afterwards, and I looked at her and I thought, oh, I should know who this is, and I don't. And she extended her hand and she said, I'm Joan Lightsell. She was the president of the University System of New Hampshire. And she said, they came to me, and I said no as well. It made me so proud to be in New Hampshire, to know that our little state, our live free or die state, said to the federal government, go pound sand, when they came looking for the names of students that were, at least in, to the students' information and belief, confidential information. And then Section 508 really piggybacks with 507. And that one is particularly horrendous. And any of your listeners who have filled out educational forms to get student loans or grants for their college-bound high school seniors are familiar with the National Education Statistics Act. They are required to give the most personal types of information, their Social Security numbers, their bank account numbers, not only for the student but for the parents, sometimes grandparents, and siblings' information is also sought. And that is established at the front of the form. None of this information will be released as personally identifiable information. It is only for statistical purposes. It is only released in aggregate form. Well, under 508 of the Patriot Act, that is no longer the case. The federal government can get individuals' information in terms of all of their financial data and the financial data of family members on the basis of a warrant that a judge can't turn down and simply on an assertion that they need it for an investigation on terrorism.
And talking about learning materials or education in general, switching over to the library situation, I wonder if you can say a bit about what you found out from librarians around this state.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Ashcroft and many of the U.S. attorneys and their spokespeople who have debated and discussed this issue around the country have said that there is no instance of Section 215 being used at libraries, and that is patently false. I've spoken at librarians' conferences and at various fora around the state where librarians are present, and they have come up to me as individuals, and as I mentioned to you earlier, I have a terrible memory for names, so even if I were put under oath, I couldn't tell you who they were, not that I would, even if I could remember. But I've had probably a score or more of librarians come up to me over the past 2 years and say they came to my library and asked for the information. And then they would look at me with fear and loathing in their eyes and say, what can I do? And what I've said to librarians, groups and meetings and individual librarians all across the state and in some fora in surrounding states, destroy your data. There is no reason to keep track of my reading habits. If I check out a book and I bring it back, destroy the data. Then you can smile sweetly at the feds and say, I'm sorry, I don't have that information. But I said, absent that, what you need to do is say to the feds with smiles on your faces, if you would go sit in the historical reading section, perhaps you'd like a copy of the Bill of Rights to thumb through. I will call the attorney for the library, and when he arrives, you may present your request for data, for information, for access to our data, to our attorneys.
And I'm understanding that it's illegal for librarians to kind of release the fact that they've been questioned about somebody's particular reading habits.
Each of those librarians who came to me and told me that they had that information had been sought from them faced the potential of a felony charge and 10 years in a federal prison. It's an act of enormous courage. Now, do I think John Ashcroft is going to go around and arrest librarians and put them on trial across this country? Absolutely not. I don't think there's a jury in this nation who would convict a librarian of informing the public or an individual whose records had been sought that the federal government was investigating them. But that's not the point. It's like any other attempt to chill speech, to chill thought, and to chill constitutionally protected activity. If librarians are afraid, it is more likely that they will comply with requests from the federal government that I firmly believe violate the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
And I wonder if, you know, given what we've talked about today, this might be sort of an extreme characterization. However, I think it's a legitimate question to ask. To what extent do we still live in a democratic society in the United States?
You know, that's a very, not only is it a difficult question to answer, it's a difficult question to think about. I'm 62 years old, and I have lived here all of my life. And I like to think that this is a country where all of us have the right to vote. I wish more of us exercised that right, but we did a little bit better this time. But so many millions of people who have the ability to register and vote choose not to do so, whether because they're disinterested or they're simply, they've given up. And feel that their vote doesn't count. And so many voting irregularities across the country, both in the 2000 and in the 2004 elections, have really caused many people to question whether or not our votes even count. And that, to me, is a menu for the destruction of democracy. If we don't believe that our fundamental right to vote is respected and that once cast that our votes are counted, then there is precious little reason for us to become involved in civic duty, in participation in democracy, in involvement with our society. If we think that we are on the outside, more and more of us will begin to act as outsiders. And with all of the focus that there is on electronic voting machines, which scare the living whatever out of me because I don't trust them, and because I know, even as a computer illiterate, that it is not a difficult task to pre-program machines to register the information that you want them to provide before the information is even entered. If we don't move toward electronic machines that have a full paper receipt that the voter can verify as accurate before the vote is cast, that is then put into a holding place in anticipation of or in the possibility of a recount, then we are at the mercy of the same hackers who have gotten into the war room at the Pentagon, who have taken the credit card information of more than 7 million customers of one single credit card company. We are at the mercy of people who can use the electronic voting machines to get the result that they want, rather than the result that we, as the keepers of the democracy, as the voters, in essence, voted for. It's frightening.
And I was reading on the ACLU website that some 367 communities in 43 states have passed resolutions urging Congress to revisit provisions of the Patriot Act, including four statewide resolutions in Alaska, Hawaii, and sandwiching New Hampshire, both Maine and Vermont. Two questions on this. Is there a movement to pass a statewide resolution here in the home of Live Free or Die? And do you have any advice for New Hampshire people working on this locally in their own communities?
Yes, there is an effort. There was a piece of legislation introduced during the 2003-2004 session. And because there was not time to change the wording and to make it comply with the desires of the sponsors, they asked that it be set aside, and it was. I expect there will be another introduction in the 2005-2006 session. And the advice I have is, this is a citizen legislature here in New Hampshire. We have 400 members of our House of Representatives, only 24 senators, but 400 House members. Contact them. You see these people every day. They are in the supermarket, they're at the dump, they're in church, they're at the PTA. Ask them to support a resolution saying that New Hampshire will not abide by a piece of legislation that so threatens and endangers our fundamental civil liberties and the Bill of Rights on which this country is founded.
Claire Ebel of the New Hampshire Civil Liberties Union, thank you very much for talking with me today.
It was a pleasure to meet with you, and I look forward to hearing the broadcast.
You can have my civil rights. Just leave me one or two to use when I go out Friday night. Lots of evildoers out there who hate democracy, so we must give up our freedom to preserve our liberty. Well, you should question my neighbor, search his place, take him downtown. He's either Buddhist or he's Muslim, I forget, but hey, he's brown. Either way, what I'm trying to say is he ain't like me and you. And listen here, why should I fear? You know everybody loves the Jews. Well, stop me on the highway, search my car and my cavity. Delve into my past like I'm a Supreme Court nominee. If I don't got nothing to hide, then why should I complain? And if I don't like it, I can always go live with Castro or Hussein. Mr. Cheney, you can have my civil rights. Just leave me one or two to use when I go out Friday night. Lots of evildoers out there who hate democracy, so we must give up our freedom to preserve our liberty. Well, I'm a real American, bought a little flag to prove I ain't no commie, fascist, Muslim, pinko fag. I hang it on my window, show how much I care. Just don't ask me if I owned it when them big buildings still there. Well, I'm an atheist, so I won't get pissed if you take away Amendment the First and freedom of the press. Well, who do I look like? William Randolph Hearst. Peaceable assembly, redressing grievances. Boy, that sounds like hippie talk. We don't need your words, man. Ain't you heard? All the doves have turned to hawks. Well, I love the Constitution, but we need a new addition. Not a total demolition, just a small redefinition. Let's commit now to the mission. Make a couple small additions, like the use of intuition to declare the opposition. So thumbing through the articles, I offer admonition at the dangerous omission of a law against sedition. You needn't be a politician or a nuclear technician to make a requisition for a couple new submissions. I heard Mr. Bush say there's a new kind of war out there. Apparently it's the kind you don't gotta get Congress to declare. I heard Mr. Lott say there ain't no minority. Then he stared at Mr. Gephardt, who nodded sheepishly. Hey, Mr. Ashcroft, you can have my civil rights. Just leave me one or two to use when I go out Friday night. Lots of evil doers out there who hate democracy. So we must give up our freedom to preserve our liver, 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 preserve our liberty.
That was Uncivil Rights with Adam Brodsky, also from The Mob Project, Musicians to Oust Bush. Here's a poem by Aaron Kramer, written in 1950, when people were being jailed for refusal to cooperate with the House Un-American Activities Committee on charges of being in contempt of Congress. It's called In Contempt. Build high, build wide your prison walls, that there be room enough for all who hold you in contempt. Build wide, that all the bad be locked inside. The birds who still insist on song, the sunlight streams still running strong, the flowers ablazing every hue, all are in contempt of you. When you have seized the gallant few, whose glory casts a shade on you, how can you now go home with ease, jangling your heavy dungeon keys? The parents dreaming still of peace, the playful children, the wild geese, who still must fly the mountains too, all are in contempt of you. When you have seized both moon and sun and jailed the poems one by one, entrapped each troublemaking breeze, then you must throw away your keys. Build high, build wide your prison walls, that there be room enough for all who hold you in contempt. Build wide, that all the bad be locked inside.
Clear Channel Communications sent their member radio stations a long list of objectionable artists and CDs. While the country was despairing, there'd be no excuse for airing any music more subversive, more extreme than Kenny G's. There'll be no more Don McLean, no more Kansas, no more Queen, no more radicals like Cher or Billy Joel. In the wake of 9/11, you can't play Stairway to Heaven. See how tragedy unites us all around a common goal. And scanning down the list of names their DJs hadn't spun, Steve Miller, Smashing Pumpkins, Talking Heads. Because if they play Imagine, then the terrorists have won. We grabbed the phone and called them up and said, why aren't we on the list? Are we doing something wrong? After all we've done for you, can't you censor just one song? Who the hell is REM? Like we can't compete with them. Out of all the lists in history, that's the one we should be on. Are we so status quo? Are you calling us a liar? You think we're just not as radical as Light My Fire? You say our stuff is blander than Neil Diamond, that is slander. We demand to be banned, or we're warning you we'll turn into a U2 cover band till you put us on that list where we belong. Then one day Joseph Lieberman, remember Joseph Lieberman, The Democrats once ran him for vice president and won. And to show how hard he works for those vice presidential perks, he teamed up with Lynn Cheney and a new list was begun. Over 100 professors were listed as transgressors for disparaging the president's new war. It was time for schools to snitch on the leftists in their midst. And that's exactly what this patriotic list was for. Joe burbled with intrigue as he crashed the Ivy League with intent to start a new McCarthy scare. But imagine his amazement when pounding down the pavement were professors waving posters which declared, "Why aren't we on the list? Have you seen our resumes? What did we ever do to incur you people's praise? We can prove that we're seditious. Won't you even act suspicious? We've worked for those positions on your privileged lexicon. Once you've scanned our major works, once you've glanced at our credentials, we feel certain you'll concur that our censure is essential. We aren't everyday dissenters. We're dissenters holding tenure. You people have some nerve. An ad hominem attack would be the least that we deserve. Come on, put us on that list where we belong. Ask any therapist for a practical prognosis. She'll tell you making lists can be a symptom of psychosis. And it's becoming clear, too clear to be dismissed, that there's somebody this year who's got a thing for making lists. There's a list of evil men. There's a list of evil nations. There's a list of suspect profiles and suspicious organizations. There's a list of strange new laws. There's a list of detainees. It's a list 1,000 long, which we're all not allowed to see. But if it's anything at all like their last illustrious list, that ought to give us some idea of whom this one consists. 'Cause if you wrote the Bill of Rights, which we're hoping still exists, you'd fit their definition of suspicious terrorists. And for the people who resist, or the people who assist, there's a mystery tribunal in a military mist. It's a twisted justice system which can always add more twists when it gets to feeling listless as its bill runs out of grist. And nobody has to be a vicious pessimist to perceive that there's a question here that everybody's missed. It's the question that persists through every day of this, namely, why aren't we on the list?
That was the Prince Mishkins with The List. This is Making Waves on WSCA, and we now bring you Utah Phillips back again to tell us about From the Bottom Up.
I feel a lot better about it when I take it from the bottom up, going up the Sisters of the Road and working with the people who are organizing on the street. I think that as I walk out my door downtown and see what people are doing with energy alternatives and retrofitting cars for alcohol here in town and making the alcohol, I have to realize that there are too many good people doing too many good things for me to afford the luxury of being pessimistic. And so I'm not, and I won't be. I do feel hopeful when I turn the world upside down and see what's going on, but that all has to be networked. That all has to come together. It's a hard and oppressive time. I called up the Sisters of the Road to find out how things were going because of this terrible ice storm that came through, and those Portland people are not used to that sort of thing. Everything had a solid sheet of ice all over it. But I was also told that two people froze to death in Portland, froze to death on the street. Now I'm on my way down to Santa Barbara, and I called down there and found out that the peace people there have gone down on the beach and put up crosses for every American killed in the Iraqi war And people walking down on the beach, taking the evening air, they stumble on that. And it's a very moving experience that you've got to deal with right then. When I heard that, I thought about the people dead on the street. I said, these are not disconnected. They tell me that those under the crosses in the military cemeteries made the ultimate sacrifice. There is a world of difference between sacrificing and being sacrificed. Those who lie under those crosses and those found frozen to death on the street were sacrificed on the altar of human greed. Those who benefit from that sacrifice in the workplace, in the field, in the prison, on the battlefield, those who benefit from that sacrifice have got to understand that the harvest of greed is not wealth but rage, and it can't go on. It all has to be repaid. It all will be repaid. I'm a peaceful man. I'm a man of peaceful means because I have to be. I don't want the world to blow up. But that rage is there, and it builds, and it builds. And if it is not repaid, those who benefit from these sacrifices are simply going to perish. I don't know when. There's no way to predict what time. But I'll tell you, they fight with money, and we fight with time. And they're going to run out of money before we run out of time.
Speaking of time, we're just about out of time for today's show. That was Utah Phillips from the bottom up. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be having an interview with Larry Brinkner Wood about Jesus as a peace justice activist. We'll be focusing on Christianity and Christmas and the holidays and what that means. So tune in. Also, if you would like to send feedback to about the show, you can email nhmakingwaves@yahoo.com. Also, if you would like to look at archives of previous shows, take a look at www.freewebs.com/sprav/audio.htm. And we're going to go out with a song by Bruce Coburn called Trickle Down.
Magazine, boardroom, pop star, pinstripe, prophet of peckerhead greed. You say trust me with the money, the keys to the universe. Trickle down will give us everything we need. Brand new century, private penitentiary, bank vault, utopia padded for the few. Tumors for the masses, coughing for the masses, earphones for the masses, and they all serve you. Trickle down, give them the business. Trickle down, supposed to give us the goods. Cups held out to catch a bit of the bounty. Trickle down everywhere, trickle down. For education, now looks more like ignoration. Take the people's money and slip it to the corporation. Yellow rain, golden shower, pesticide, firepower, summon feudal demons of sweatshop subjugation. Work fair,
foul air, homeless beggars everywhere, picture phone aristocrats lounge around the pool. Captains of industry smiling beneficently, leaky hull, super tanker, ship of fools. To give us the goods. Cups held out to catch a bit of the bounty. Trickle down everywhere, trickle down blood. First got to privatize, then they get to piratize, hooked on avarice. How do we get off it?